Now we continue our conversation about the Supreme Court's new term. Adam Liptak is with us. He's the Supreme Court correspondent for the New York Times. You can join in with your questions about this term of the Supreme Court and the big issues there at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Adam, we touched on the campaign finance case before the Supreme Court. We'll get into some of the other issues you mentioned. But first, you recently wrote a piece about Justice Ginsburg, pressure from some Democrats for her to step down, to retire now while there's still a Democrat in the White House. How has she responded to those calls?
She's given lots of interviews suggesting that she's not going anywhere, that she loves the job, that she's good at it. She enjoys being the senior member of the court's liberal wing. And I take her at her word. She's 80 years old, but she's energetic and whip smart and in full command of the arguments and materials. And she told the Washington Post over the weekend that she expects a Democrat to be elected in 2016, suggesting that she's got no strategic reason to step down, although I don't know how good her crystal ball is.
It's amazing how there are these nine jobs. They've been such a big issue for presidential politics. Who's going to be there to appoint the next justice, and when are they going to decide they can't do their job anymore?
Yeah. Now, you know, she's the oldest justice, but not by a lot. So you could ask the same question of Breyer or Kennedy or Scalia. But somehow attention seems to focus on Justice Ginsburg, perhaps because although she's been given a clean bill of health, she's had two battles with cancer.
Well, campaign finance, we mentioned public prayer is an issue that's going before the Supreme Court in this session. What is the case and what's going on?
There's a town in upstate New York called Greece, which opens its town board meetings with a prayer given by a so-called chaplain of the month. That chaplain is almost always Christian, and the prayer is often quite sectarian. And the question is whether that practice violates the First Amendment's ban on the government establishment of religion. And that would seem to be a fairly difficult case were it not for a decision from a few decades ago in which the Supreme Court said that the Nebraska legislature was allowed to hire a minister and put him on the payroll, a Presbyterian minister, and open prayers of legislative, open legislative sessions with prayers. And that precedent would seem to suggest that the Supreme Court's going to be okay with this upstate New York practice as well.
And then abortion rights, that's always a hot issue coming to the Supreme Court. What are the particular cases that are headed to the Supreme Court this term?
So there are two abortion-related cases. One of them will definitely be argued and decided this term, and that's about whether Massachusetts was entitled to set up a kind of buffer zone around abortion clinics, depending on your perspective, to limit the free speech rights of people who oppose abortion or to protect the privacy of women at a vulnerable moment in their lives. And there, too, and this is true of a lot of cases this term, there's a precedent that would seem to be very informative. In 2000, the court upheld a similar buffer zone, but the membership of the court has changed some, and I think that 2000 precedent might just be vulnerable. The second abortion case would be a really big deal, but it's not clear it's going to be argued this term. It involves an Oklahoma law that limits the use of drugs that induce abortions. And the U.S. Supreme Court has sent the case back to the Oklahoma Supreme Court for some clarification. But when that case returns to the court, that's going to be a big deal in seeing what level of abortion restriction the U.S. Supreme Court is prepared to tolerate.
Well, that second one first, is this just part of this ongoing decades-long reexamination of the Roe versus Wade decision?
Yes, and more specifically, in a couple of decades after Roe, the court, with Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in the majority, kind of tweaked Roe and said the test now is going to be we're not going to tolerate laws that put an undue burden on women's access to abortion. And the meaning of that term, undue burden, is really in play now that Justice O'Connor has retired from the court, been replaced by the more conservative Justice Samuel Alito, and this case will give us some insight about what counts as an undue burden or not.
And that change, let's talk about that a little more, Sandra Day O'Connor leaving the court. That had a big impact on a lot of these issues we're talking about, didn't it?
Exactly right. on cases involving affirmative action and other aspects of race, on cases involving campaign finance, religion, abortion. She was at the very center of the court and really moderated and controlled the impulses of both justices on the right and left. When she's replaced by Justice Alito, you immediately see some of her signature work getting dismantled. Citizens United is an example of that. A case on a partial birth abortion law is an example of that, and you see it elsewhere as well.
Now, with that abortion buffer zone rule, as you mentioned, that's a free speech issue in a lot of ways, more than an abortion issue. Can we expect justices to vote the same way they would in an abortion-related issue, or is this a whole different ballgame for them?
Well, the answer is, and you're right to draw that distinction, but I don't think the distinction makes a difference in the voting patterns, because there's been a shift in the court, and in many ways, the more pro-First Amendment side tends to be the conservative wing on the court. Those are the reliable votes against restrictions on speech.
On whether we're talking about campaign finance or protests?
Right, or military funerals or laws against violent video games or laws against depictions of animal cruelty. You see the liberals signing on to some of those, but the more conservative justices are fairly consistently quite pro-First Amendment, notably Justices Kennedy and Chief Justice Roberts.
One more issue I wanted to get to is, and this is another perennial, it seems like, affirmative action in college admissions. That's coming back again, right?
It is, but it's coming back in an interesting context. The classic question, which the court basically ducked last year, is may a public university take account of race in admissions decisions? And you know that question the Supreme Court has grappled with in various ways and never fully answered. The question it's going to decide, and it'll hear argument next Tuesday, is sort of the flip side of it. It's not may universities do it, but can the voters of a state say, we don't want that. We don't want race-conscious admissions. Michigan's voters in 2006 passed a constitutional amendment barring racial preferences. And the question in the new case is, does that state constitutional amendment violate the federal constitution's equal protection clause by putting minorities on a different footing from, say, athletes and college legacy admissions and so on?
And then one more issue. Did I see there's another challenge to the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, but on contraceptive coverage making its way up to the Supreme Court?
That case has divided the lower courts and is very, very likely to be granted by the Supreme Court and to be heard this term. The question there, and this case has elements of Citizens United, the Affordable Care Act, sex, religion. It's a wonder from a journalist perspective. It's a Christmas present. So the question is, can companies be required to give their employees insurance coverage for contraceptives? And some corporations say that they have a free exercise of religion right to decline to do so. So it sounds a lot like Citizens United, which found that corporations have free speech rights. Now we'll learn whether corporations have religious free exercise rights.
Interesting. So all these heavily politicized issues this year and in the past couple of terms, it seems, if I take the short view, like the Supreme Court is unusually politicized and a lot of big political items are at stake. Am I just fooling myself and it's always been this way, or is there something different now?
It is a closely divided court, and it's been many decades since you could say this, but every one of the five Republican appointees is more conservative than every one of the four Democratic appointees. So what could be cast as questions of judicial philosophy map on fairly neatly onto the usual ways of thinking about partisan political outcomes. And I don't know that I'd call the court more politicized or even necessarily politicized, but there is a kind of correlation between who appointed these justices and how they vote.
As a Supreme Court correspondent, have you detected a gradual uptick of people really being interested in what's going on there with cases like this coming across the table?
The two sets of cases that ended the last two terms, the Affordable Care Act in 2012 and then same-sex marriage and voting rights this last year, really riveted public attention. I think the cases we've just been talking about are quite important, but I don't think they're going to capture the public imagination quite the same way.
All right. Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Really fun to be here. Thank you.
That was Adam Liptak. He's the New York Times Supreme Court correspondent.